Tested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
We shift gears now to another story. Taking a bit of a breather from the trade conversation, and this one typically speaks to employee relations and a case study that we're going to evaluate now on office disciplinary hearings and how these need to be managed in such a manner that provide not only the sensitivity to the cases that are represented, but also a clear reflection of the rules and regulations that are stipulated in the Labour Act. And this is largely to avoid any legal backlash for employees. We join now by Phethe Ninkuna, Director in the Employment Law Practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr, often referred to as CDH. Phethe, thank you so much for your time.
It's a pleasure, Gugulethu. Good evening to you and your listeners.
Excited to speak to you this evening as we take a look at a matter that really hits South Africans close to home. Jobs are important, yeah. And if you have a job, you are certainly looking to keep it and maintain it. And that does speak to a level of understanding of the roles and responsibilities of employees and employers. We have a case study that we're going to use as an example, and maybe before we get there, we just need to get clarity and simplify the dynamics of disciplinary hearings and disciplinary reports. What does the law say about how they need to be managed?
All right. So let us start with the foundational statute, which is the Labor Relations Act. It has a Schedule 8 being the Code of Good Practice on dismissals. One of the things that the code speaks about is how to conduct a pre-dismissal process in a procedurally fair manner. And in the text of that code, it speaks about investigations, determining whether or not there is, in fact, so I'm really putting it loosely, avoiding legal jargon, but it speaks about investigating and determining whether or not there is a substantively fair reason for dismissal. Practically, that is interrogating the facts, the allegations. Is there a case to be answered? Often employers will use that process to gather evidence, to speak to relevant witnesses, to speak to the employee who's alleged to have conducted themselves in breach of the employer's policies or rules, and then make a determination on whether or not there is a credible case to be answered. If so, then this goes before a disciplinary process. Now, our courts have clarified, or have provided guidance rather, that this does not need to be a criminalized approach into disciplinary hearings. You know, when you sit across the table in a room that is fighting, leading evidence as you would in a criminal court. And added to this, the standard of proof in labor processes or labor matters is on a balance of probabilities. So there are types of misconduct or allegations that you can deal with in a less adversarial manner. So once you've determined that there is a case to be answered, you then hold a disciplinary inquiry that is before an impartial chairperson, who then makes a determination on guilt, and then parties are invited to make submissions on mitigation, aggravation of sanction, and then there's an outcome, which may be a dismissal or a lesser sanction.
Got you. And I think this is important, right? Because we almost have to go back to the basics, as you say, of understanding the disciplinary process. Some might have gone through it, others Correct. Might not be privy to it. And for those who might experience it, obviously need to be, I guess, armed with the necessary information to understand how it should be fulfilled. And there's a few recommendations that you've shared with employers here to take note of key considerations before there's backlash from the employee at hand. And you mentioned accuracy and fairness in the note that you've published. And I think this is important, because when HR, your manager, and yourself as an employee are sitting in an office and debating a certain area of conflict, confusion, or disciplinary action that needs to be taken, I'm assuming that at some point information and record keeping needs to happen, right?
Correct. So it's always important, because if the matter is challenged before an alternative dispute resolution forum, such as the CCMA, you would need to demonstrate that this was the process that we carried out, because employees may challenge procedural fairness. So it always helps when you've got objective evidence of the process that you followed, this is what you did, the person was afforded the rights, they were informed of their rights during the process, they were allowed to listen to the evidence and question the employer's witnesses. And then we go into substantive fairness. What was the reason for the dismissal? What is the misconduct? Was it established on a balance of probabilities? Again, back to the conversation of record keeping, the particular case study, so just to put the accuracy and fairness into context, this one, many may have known about it, Ndobe and versus Gibela Rail Consortium, which had to do with the defamation claim that actually came before the High Court. This employee had gone through a disciplinary process. He was found guilty and a dismissal sanction meted out. He appealed and a lesser sanction was given, being a final written warning. A few months later, he then brings a defamation claim against his employer based on an investigation report that was compiled and distributed during the disciplinary process. And in that particular matter, what was very, what I would say is key is that firstly, the quality of the report, which the court noted, because when you consider whether or not it was defamatory, the court observed that the report in itself was misleading or actually gave the impression that Mr. Ndobe was responsible for what he had been alleged to have done, when in fact he only assisted, and a lot of what had gone wrong was not even his doing. So the drafting of the report, the factual content was in fact incorrect. And on that basis, the court found that there was defamatory. However, the publication, which the court said, in the first instance, it's not publication because this was made available to participants in the disciplinary process, being himself, the employer's representatives, and the disciplinary inquiry chairperson. That does not amount to defamation in the context of a defamation claim. However, if there's a differing view, a disciplinary process is protected by privilege, mm-hmm. which is an established principle in our law. When you make defamation statements in the context of litigation, that is privileged, provided that it is relevant and all these other considerations. So effectively, an employer is not barred from investigating. You just need to make sure that firstly, you have competent people who understand the parameters, who carry out these investigations, confidentiality. Everything that is stated in the report is factual. You can't just make assumptions, because the court noted that, but although when you interrogate the facts, Mr. Ndobe was not responsible to the extent that has been characterized, but it gives an impression that he was. And when you look at the definition of defamation, mm-hmm. it's the unlawful publication of a statement that has the effect of injuring a person's reputation. Yes. And the manner in which the report was formulated, it had in fact injured his reputation, because it gave the impression that he had caused a 6 million rand loss, which is not true.
Exactly. And I think this is so important, right? Because this is where things perhaps get lost in the context of a conversation and even the disciplinary hearing and the process itself, that does need to be prioritized. Confidentiality, avoiding prejudice, as well as sensitivity. And I'm keen to understand, as we look at this particular case study, how some of these mistakes and errors do seep through. And maybe it does call for, again, the involvement and participation of an independent party. Because along the line, I guess, personal relations and interactions do sour, and that then might lead to these discrepancies in disciplinary hearings.
So there isn't a blanket response or approach to that, because often the investigation would be pre-inquiry. Some employers have the financial muscle to bring in a forensic investigator or a law firm or an external consultant. Some do not have those resources. But it is important that whoever is appointed to do the investigation understands the parameters, conducts it in a confidential official manner, and those who participate in the investigation, because often when you investigate, you have to speak to people in the organization, there needs to be a clear articulation of the company's stance on confidentiality when you conduct these processes, when you are participating in these processes. Because, I mean, the claim, there was even a claim of vicarious liability against the person who actually then disseminated the report. So if the employers, if anyone acting on behalf of the employer acts outside of the parameters, the employer can in fact be held vicariously liable. But again, the facts in this case were distinct. That being said, it is important, again, I stress confidentiality, but that does not necessarily mean that you shouldn't have the conversations you need to as the employer to try and establish the veracity of the allegations, at least at face value, so that you can determine if there is a case of misconduct to be answered or not.
100%. Pateni, we'll leave it there for today. And thank you for the insight you've shared with us regarding this particular case. And just a refresher for both employees and employers to be mindful of disciplinary hearings and making sure that they go by the book to avoid any legal backlash, prioritizing accuracy and fairness, confidentiality, avoiding prejudice, and of course, managing sensitivity. Thank you again for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Pateni Nkuna, Director in the Employment Law Practice at Cliff Dekker Hofmeyr, joining us this evening.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.